Okay, good afternoon. I'd like to get started with the next presentation. We're delighted to have 3M join us this afternoon, and welcome to our webcast listeners. It's Deane Dray from Goldman Sachs. Our speaker today from 3M is the CFO, Pat Campbell, who's held this position at 3M since 2002. Prior to joining 3M, Pat had been with General Motors for 25 years, serving in various capacities, including CFO for GM's international operations, the CFO for the European operations, and the head of GM's investor relations. Matt Ginter, investor relations, is also here sitting up in the front row. Here's the format. Pat is going to walk us through a quick set of update company slides, and then we'll transition right to Q&A.
Thanks, Deane. Good afternoon, everybody. Everybody okay? Good. Okay, this really is not a big presentation. There's only about four or five slides just to kind of give you kind of an overview of the company. You know, naturally forward-looking statements, so you can, this is in the package. Importantly, regardless of what the economic environment is, we are focused on maintaining our long-term business objectives. We're continuing to invest in and expand our fabulous core businesses. For those of you who know the company, we have about 35 operating divisions in the company, thousands and thousands of products that go to many, many different markets, which I think is really kind of a strength in these kind of times, the diversity of our portfolio. We continue to build and widen our enduring franchises. These are franchises that you think of as, when you think of the product, you really think of the company and so forth. Take Scotch tape, take Post-it notes, take Filtrete filters and so forth. They really are category-defining businesses. Respiratory products would be another one. We're driving cultural entrepreneurship in the company. In many cases, our businesses are big in aggregate, $26 billion, but many of our businesses are relatively small. How we do that is we've got, in many cases, very small teams that build very solid small businesses going to niche markets in many cases. Investing in R&D and driving faster product introduction. R&D and new products really are the lifeblood of the company. They will continue to be the lifeblood of the company, and we keep reinforcing that. Retain a platform of manufacturing excellence. I think one of the things that is probably the least understood about 3M is the manufacturing process capability that's inside the company. A lot of people know our products, and we do a great job of actually keeping our manufacturing processes highly secret. If you were to see how we make many of our products, you would actually then try to figure out, you know, how you'd actually do both the product and the manufacturing process. A lot of the trade secret know-how of our products is really embedded in the manufacturing process as well. That's a little bit harder to really explain. A number of you who were at our analyst meeting last year had the opportunity to visit some of our pilot plants, as well as our large manufacturing plant in Hutchinson to get some view as to how our manufacturing process works. We continue to work at shortening our supply chain to drive service improvements, reduce working capital, and lower our overall tax rate, primarily through improving the localization of our supply chains closer to the markets. 65% of our business is outside the United States, yet about half of our manufacturing and more is actually inside the U.S. That causes, you know, long supply chains, high inventory levels. What we want to do is, as we invest money, that we put that investment where the growth is. We're in that transition right now. We'll continue to restructure our compensation plans around driving the change necessary to really drive the growth and performance that we're telling you about as well. In the near term, we're focused on operational execution, conservative planning mindset. Actually, at this conference last year, I believe, Deane, I made a comment about planning 2008, okay, in a very conservative level. A few people were kind of, "Ooh, don't, you know, don't say that." That is our mindset. You know, last year we talked about a concern about, you know, credit markets, you know, tightening up and so forth. Our mindset is around planning to remain ahead of where the economy is developing. So we're ahead of, if the economy is going to go down, let's make sure that our actions are ahead of it rather than constantly trying to respond to the marketplace. Not that we always get it right, but generally speaking, as we look forward here into 09, and we're not going to give a kind of a forecast for 09 today, we'll actually do that in our December update meeting here in New York. But generally speaking, our view is that, a lot like everybody else is, a very uncertain world, and we're effectively going to be planning for the worst. We're going to take a number of actions here to get ahead of what we think is going to be a tough economic global environment, much more in the developed part of the world than the developing world, even though I think we'll see a slowing on that side as well. So we're getting ahead of those issues. Q3, I think you saw that we had made some restructuring, eliminated about 1,000 positions in the company. There will be more to go here in the fourth quarter, and we'll continue to chip away at that. We're definitely leveraging the diversification of the geographies, markets, products, and technologies to our advantage. We think of these kind of economic times, the diversity of our portfolio provides a big advantage to us. Embedded in the company, of course, is a very large healthcare business that I think is a little less immune to some of the economic conditions, not completely immune from it, but less so anyways. Investing prudently in underpenetrated businesses and geographic areas. There's a number of areas across the globe that are, we still have relatively low-risk investments that we can make. I think of places like China as an example. That very clear that China probably as a market and the economy will slow down. But the reality is we have a number of opportunities to significantly expand our growth in China with relatively small investment, primarily around people. Well, we have a disciplined capital allocation approach. In today's world, it's all about liquidity preservation. Right now, our share repurchase program is effectively an anti-dilution type activity. And, of course, at this share price, there's not a lot of reissuing going on anyways, and also a slowdown here on our U.S.-based acquisitions. We have moratorium here, and my only caveat is that, you know, if the right deal absolutely came about at the right price, obviously we'd have to look at that. Uninterrupted access to the CP market, which is very good news, very strong balance sheet. We are issuing CPs with maturities now out to February. We never had a problem, okay, in the CP market. We were always able to get what we needed, not always at the maturities we needed. We recently issued a $800 million three-year bond at 4.5%. That was last week. And back in August, we did an $850 million five-year bond at 4.375%. So I think it shows the strength of our name in the debt markets. A little bit was, I think, good timing on our side, but also shows the strength of the company. It also shows the strength of trying to keep our credit rating the way it is. And our initial read on 2009 CapEx, when we look at putting our 09 plan together, is we'll bring our capital spending down by about $200 million when we compare that to 08 levels. Now, the highlights. Many of you who follow us listen to the call. This is a chart that we had in kind of the year-to-date progress. Importantly, we set some goals going into the year. One of them was 10% EPS growth, which I want to remind my friend sitting down here, okay? Which will okay. We'll debate that a little bit later. Okay. Sales have been up. You can see 8%. If you exclude optical films, it's actually up 11%. You
see
what operating income
has
done, up 6.9%.
Like I said,
if you
see right away if you have to retake it before.
You see
the
strong double-digit number.
Going through all
the
steps.
Earnings per share through the first half.
Also, to be able to look at a prep and rotate it and zoom in and put the 3D glasses on, that really helps.
Today
give
we've
me
had
feedback,
a,
even without somebody else telling me, oh, you didn't capture the margin here. I can look myself and say, did I get the walls
exactly
parallel? Did I get the margin?
Into,
did I get enough for traction?
Year,
I know at least
but,
that
yeah,
much. That's what I'm looking for. And I can definitely just kind of quickly take a peek at the scan and see, did I get what I need to get? Do I want to, you know, refine this corner a little bit? And you can't ever get into the mouth enough with a mirror or even with a conventional impression to know if your prep is good. And here this gives you the feedback that an instructor would give you. And then in our classes, they show us pictures and drawings of perfect preps. And now you can actually almost compare what you see in textbooks and what you see in the patient's mouth, both flat out right in front of you, which is huge to help us know what we're doing.
We have a lot of firepower available in the company, and we do plan to keep our liquidity very, very high until this market really
has a lot of areas that
3M has the company you've turned to for quality dental solutions for more than 4 years.
He's
proud to be at the forefront of digital dental.
To be able to minimize
the systems and materials that we offer under the Lava Precision Solutions portfolio highlight our unique ability to provide doctors and labs with innovative and integrated end-to-end digital solutions like the digital workflow.
Have to redo all those steps. You don't have to waste the tray. You don't have to waste the material. So it definitely saves time and money.
We're a 160-year-old company, and we take that very seriously. Proven ability to prosper during economic downturns. The way we look at downturns,
I've had patients come back for three appointments.
Downturns are an opportunity for us to actually improve the business, so we're stronger when the economy returns. It's time to basically take advantage of everything you've worked on. The strong will actually come out of this a lot stronger, and that's really what our desire is here. Strong balance sheet and obviously consistent cash flow, very little volatility there, and we continuously assess and rebalance around the business. So with that, I guess, Dean, I'd open up. Still stand up.
You can, but it will be more comfortable right here. It's interesting. We have some of the standard questions that are geared towards what's topical right now, coming out of the third quarter on funding and liquidity and restructuring, and in your update, you covered all of them. In fact, that one slide on funding and liquidity, the fact that you're issuing CP in February, up to February, and you're already issuing it long or out in the debt markets, even 3 year feels like a long bond right now.
It does,
but the idea that you're out there issuing, I think speaks for itself, and we can take that off the table right now.
Okay.
All right, so that brings us to probably kind of the headwinds, and it's been a recurring theme. Let's talk about FX and pension. FX first, and this has been a theme here at the conference on how it has turned so quickly from being a tailwind into a headwind. For 3M specifically, how are you thinking of it? Because of your manufacturing base, it also impacts you as well on the margin. So take us through the FX headwind, the transition in the past month, and how that's affecting your thinking on 09.
Okay, sure, I'll do that. And I'll be maybe a little repetitive of what I said on the call for those who didn't attend or clarify some things. First of all, as we did say, two-thirds of our business outside the U.S., so we get a sizable translation benefit. So that has been benefiting us really through the almost all of the 2000s here. In the first 9 months of the year, if you look at the FX as a specific piece of our EPS number, it's probably in the 20-22 cent range of benefit. what we said on the call is when we look at the fourth quarter, rates, of course, had moved pretty significantly at even September end, but more so as you went through the month of October. So when we did the call, what we basically said was that from last time we talked to people, the fourth quarter had moved by 10 cents. So let me clarify that. What that says is we've been running about 7 cents. And so we were, if rates had kind of continued at those levels, in the fourth quarter we probably would have had some impact of 7 to 10 cents, give or take. That effectively is off the table now, okay? So in the fourth quarter right now, if you had just a look at it right now, it's probably flat to maybe slightly negative, okay, in the fourth quarter. If you think about it on kind of more of an annual basis, if you think about now going into 09, that number probably, the gain that we had in 08 of, say, 22 cents, goes the other way, so we probably have a headwind of 22 cents, okay, going into 09, give or take. Because in some cases, rates are really going back to about 07, 07 levels. Now, we do hedge 50% of our exposure. So that helps mitigate some of the, it's delayed some of the benefit that we had on the upside. And, of course, it will delay some of the penalty on the downside.
So when you hedge, that also exposes you to mark-to-mark accounting on a quarterly basis?
On a quarterly basis, yes.
So what I don't recall seeing is many of the big upside on the way up.
We've never had big moves, okay? Nothing that's,
something you would call out.
Yeah, right.
But what about on the downside?
I don't see it on the downside either. I don't see a big,
So half of the euro move?
Half of the euro, as an example, would be hedged. And we do it on a net basis. We lump all of our exposures together.
These are not specific cash flows. You're taking a percent of expected business for the year.
Of expected flows, right. Yeah,
okay.
That's right, yeah. So again, we hedge it. So the absolute impact, Dean, on an unhedged basis, of course, would be higher, on the 09 side. So we'll get some of the benefit. But that 22 cents that I gave you includes the hedge impact.
That includes it. Okay.
Yeah. So that's part of it will be definitely be a headwind.
And the margin, just take it through for the dollar of top line impact, how much actually goes to the bottom? I know you're giving it to us.
I think the simple way to model it, give or take, is the top line pretty well translates to almost a bottom line move. So if you did the calculation on the top line, now one of the things that's a little tricky for us, for us as the company, not as us as the manager of the company, is that in addition to our U.S. sales, we also have a fair amount of U.S. pricing in international markets. Our electronics business, as an example, is priced in U.S. dollars. A fair amount of our Latin America business is in U.S. dollars. So you can't literally take international sales, times a rate. You have to kind of mix it for the amount of U.S. dollar-based content, and the like. But as we look at it, it pretty well works out over time. It's almost you can almost take the revenue times our normal operating margin. That's about what the impact is
on
the business.
Switch over to pension. Also, similar benefit throughout 2008. If you snap the line today in terms of plan performance, what do you think the discount rate would be? What type of funding would you have to do for the pension? What type of pension headwind would you expect? Just ballpark for 2009.
Yeah. I wish it was 12/31. I could give you a more precise answer to this question.
But, whatever you have.
But and I think because everybody realizes that it is a point-in-time number, as of 12/31, so there's a lot of accounting ramifications as to how you actually do this. But going into the year, we had our U.S. plan was 106% funded, so we're in good shape. We put another $200 million in our plan here in the month of September. So we've been keeping our fund fully funded. The market losses this year have been pretty significant, but thus far those losses have been virtually offset by the change in the discount rate.
Right.
As we were to snap the line today, we had a 6% discount rate last year, which was kind of at the low end of where companies were reporting, and we kind of knew it was on a conservative basis. I think there's going to be more migration to more of a standardized interest discount rate, going forward here. So we'll pick up, at least again, we're snapped the line today, a pretty sizable change in the discount rate, which basically leaves us in a position where we should be about fully funded and have really no significant pension year-on-year impact in 2009. I want to remind people that we do have a favorable trend from 07 to 08 in our pension expense, about $24 million, or so per quarter. But we still have a pension cost in our P&L, so about $90 million. And the reason I try to differentiate that, Dean, is I just want to make sure that people don't think that a big piece of our income, okay, our absolute earnings, is really pension income. It's not. It's just that it's kind of been a change from 07 into 08.
Sure, in terms of a headwind. How about just swing over to a business, and there's kind of two key topics I want to make sure we touch on next is the what's happened with film and what the 09 outlook might be in terms of have we seen the bottom, and then a broader question about visibility. And I'll never forget the time in December of last year where George equated 3M to a car driving down the country road can only see as far as their lights, and it's just the idea that with short cycle businesses, there's limited visibility.
And the worst thing is it's a heavy snowstorm.
Yeah, we're about to hit, and there's ice on the road.
Right, yeah,
so but let's take the first obstacle, and film has been, no question, the last three quarters, arguably four quarters, whatever forecast you provided, it ended up being worse in terms of volume declines. Pricing, not so much so, but it looked like that bottomed this quarter in terms of synced up with your expectations. You think we're at a stage now where I know the macro is still very difficult and the competition is still very difficult and the decontenting is going on, but the pace of downside or the risk of downside, has that been mitigated?
God, that is a long question, Dean. We think the slope of the line, okay, we understand the slope of the decline, and we feel very good about in Q3 what gave us some confidence is our teams had a pretty good handle on, you know, what the rate of change were. And you kind of mentioned that is that Q2, Q3 kind of appeared to be, you know, in a very similar profile. So we've got a new business team running that. They're located now in Asia as compared to sitting in Minnesota trying to make pricing decisions, content decisions for our Asian customers. So what makes me feel good is I think they've got a pretty good handle now, okay, on where the trend of that business is going, what our content's going to be in units and the like. Obviously, there still is a big wild card, and that is where the end markets may play, you know, may play out. So I'm not trying to forecast that, you know, necessarily, you know, sitting here. But, you know, what we've said is that we think that we still have to work our way through this on a year-over-year headwind basis, probably through the first part of 09, okay, is where we'll kind of see, where we hope to see then the slope of the line start to level off now. The still will remain a very competitive industry that we have to be on the ball relative to you know, pricing and our cost performance. But the team is really responding to the challenge they were given. And I would want to remind people this is actually this was a absolutely great business, okay, with great growth, great margins, who's now become a business that's more like the rest of the, you know, rest of the company. So I don't want anybody to kind of walk away saying, boy, this is a bad business. It's just that sooner or later the situation had to, you know, eventually correct itself. So we're now dealing with that, and that will not be a significant headwind as we look into 09, with the exception of probably just that first part of the year.
All right. That was the most important thing that I heard you say on that, is that the trend level that we're seeing, indications that you have now into 09, it's not another step down.
So it will not. Our current view of the world is, you know, once we get past the early part of the year, that rate of decline really starts to become pretty, you know, pretty small.
Okay. Expectations, and we're not forecasting 09, but just expectations on core growth volumes and North America, Europe, Asia, just in terms of what have been the trends as close to near time as you can provide.
Okay. I don't know if you're trying to lead me down a...
I wasn't, I promise.
An 09 path, because we'll wait and give that to you in December. And, of course, the answer going into that is, you kind of know, is it's kind of a very uncertain world that we're all, you know, all dealing in right now. But basically, if you look at it from a trend standpoint, you know, the U.S. has been a kind of a slow growth market for us all year. Our consumer business has done very well in a very tough, you know, market here in the U.S. But our U.S. business has, you know, not been all that great, you know, all year long from a macro, you know, macro perspective. So we think we've been living through a kind of a softer economic environment for us already here in 2008. And we've been adjusting, you know, accordingly. If you look at Europe, I think Europe's a little bit of a tale of a couple pieces right now. Is that Western Europe, we've seen a slowing through 08. And I would say started with the Mediterranean countries, UK kind of up front. And then I think you now see it more in the Germany, France, you know, side of the business. I think we'll see a slowing in the emerging market piece of Eastern Europe. I'm not saying we've seen it yet, but I think you just have to anticipate that there's going to be some, you know, some slowing there. Latin America continues to run very, very well for us. The update we gave, I guess, at the September event, you know, we had a specific review of Latin America, and they still can, you know, continue to perform very, you know, very well. Asia, you know, Japan's been slow. Japan continues to be slow. Very, very good business for us in Japan. It's just very difficult to get much top line growth out of that market right now. China for us has continued to be a very, very good market. I know a number of people either said they saw declines at post-Olympics. We didn't necessarily see that. Now, that's not trying to say it's that significantly changed at this point in time. Probably the one market that probably has been impacted the most recently in Asia, of course, is Korea. Korea's had a very significant devaluation of the yuan, which, of course, as an export economy, you know, is kind of hurting, you know, is kind of hurting them, you know, right now. So that's the one that we're keeping kind of a very close, you know, very close eye on as to what do we do relative to the local market in Korea versus obviously the export, you know, the export piece of that. So that's kind of what we've kind of seen through the year. Importantly, I think if you look at historically, being a short cycle business, we have a tendency to see probably the impact sooner than some others do. So like in our consumer business, we've been living through kind of a softer end market situation in the office channel and so forth for a better part of a year. So
you notice we didn't talk about consumer roofing granules. I mean, that you've already lived through that.
Well, it, you know, businesses do, you know, obviously kind of cycle, you know, cycle around. But the consumer, you're very proud of the consumer guys. You know, they've just done a marvelous, and the team there, a marvelous job with penetration programs, with more SKUs per retailer to try to gain additional business while, you know, retail end sales are really kind of, you know, soft right now.
Great. Why don't we make sure we have time for questions? There is a microphone coming through. Lots of hands going up. Those are right up here. Please start first. Those are the first hands.
First, in light of what has happened to your experience in the film business, when you look at new products going forward, are you likely to continue to do something in that area, or are you going to go back to your sort of traditional product lines? I mean, the film business, to me, you described as being, you know, better than, you know, it's not a bad business, but it's been a complete disaster from where it was 4 or 5 years ago. So, I mean, is this something, are you out of your element in the electronics business? Are you going to just drop that and move on to something else?
Well, first of all, the film business is actually a business that's really around light management. Light management is our capability. Film actually happens to be the product, you know, the product solution for it. We will continue to aggressively work on light management type solutions for products. You know, it's easy to criticize a fabulous business, okay, that did some marvelous things for the for the company. The profitability of the optical film business fundamentally allowed us to reinvest back into our core businesses, we made our abrasives business, our adhesives business, our electrical business stronger, okay, our AED business. So, you know, it's kind of the nature a little bit of a company like ours that's very diversified. You've got businesses that, you know, have hot, you know, hot streaks, and then they come off a little bit.
Also, patents come off.
Patents come off as well. So, you know, you have to be careful on managing that. So, you know, the trick is how do you manage? You have to be able to manage businesses on the upcycle when effectively they're, I'll call it, more protected. And then you have to be able to respond when effectively, you know, be it patents come off or other, you know, competitive issues show up, so you can respond accordingly. Again, I just want to repeat that. That business is a very good, profitable business for the company. It's just that it, you know, had reached a point where it was kind of disproportionate within the company and effectively became the headline story. So there's a lot of focus on that one business, you know, by itself. And I think people have a tendency to then forget about, I'll call it, the other 34, 35 operating divisions we have in the company, which are all very, very good, you know, businesses that are very all valuable by them, you know, by themselves. So, you know, I think there's a lot of learnings, okay, through the film business, but it's more about the learnings are about making sure that you stay close to the customer. The reason we got in trouble in that business is we weren't as close to the customer as we should have during effectively a technology change with them. So the, you know, the part of the learning is, you know, how do you make sure that you just don't let that, you know, let that happen.
Another question right up here. Okay, sure.
Sorry. Obviously, research and development will be very important for 3M to come out of this downturn stronger. Now, I guess my question is, what if you could walk us through some of the decision-making process that determines how R&D spend gets allocated in the business?
Okay. It's a good question, and it could be a very, you know, long or short, you know, answer.
Depends if George were answering, it'd be much longer. Okay, so this is going to be Pat's version.
Okay, I'll give you the long technical description
that
you'd
one.
Like. Okay. And there's multiple. First of all, I have to kind of explain. There's multiple layers of R&D inside the company. There's a piece that is corporate development activities that are, you know, kind of material science related that fundamentally are platforms that every business can use. Effectively, it's the it's what makes the company so valuable are these platforms. So collectively, George and I, with the head of technology, sit down and decide, you know, what level of investment we need to continue in that activity. Then there's a piece that really then is split into two pieces. There's a piece that resides in our operating businesses, and then there's a piece in some cases that reside at our kind of our big B structure, okay, which is the aggregation in many cases of businesses that have labs, you know, in both cases. What we look at is and what we basically do is, you know, we give our businesses then, of course, work their way through product programs, you know, product, you know, how much they need to invest in new product design and so forth. And then, of course, you review that in the context of the overall plan. So we look, and every business could be different. You know, one business may decide that for their long-term health, they need to invest more in new products, technology development. Another business could be over here saying, you know what, I need to spend or reallocate more money towards marketing. Okay, I need to get more marketing dollars. So every business is so different. Okay, that's pretty hard to, you know, put them all, you know, all in one bucket. But what we look at is the vitality, the health of the pipeline of new products. What's going on relative to new product sales versus total sales of the company? Because over time we have to drive that number up. That number's got to go up for our total growth rate to go up in the company. So that's how we kind of look at it. So some people look at our results and say, well, your percent to sales went down a tenth, you know, this quarter. Well, it's not really intentional, okay, that's going up 10 or down 10, okay. What we're looking at is the makeup of the programs and the business needs that they need to grow their, you know, to grow their business. So it's, you're really making that decision on a business-by-business basis, rather than saying, you know, at a company level, we need to spend X amount. And of course, there's some, and part of the role that the big beasts play in this is that there's programs that, you know, divisions can fund by themselves, and other programs that may require, you know, maybe some bigger funding opportunities that small divisions can't afford for kind of breakthrough technologies and the like. So in those particular cases, either the big B has to kind of jointly help fund those, or collectively back with the corporation, we may have to help fund a breakthrough type development that may require multi-years before it can ever get to the market, that any one division can't necessarily afford within their P&L the upfront R&D cost. Does that help?
Yeah, got another question right here.
George Buckley in the past has indicated that for the right sizable acquisition, he'd be willing to increase leverage and C rating slip to the single A category. Is that still appropriate in this, or applicable in this time period?
That's probably an easier question to ask than to answer. Okay, and the reason I say that is, our mindset right now is, in today's world, you really value liquidity, okay, very, very highly. But you never know what's going to show up as an opportunity, okay? For me, what's changed is that you have to look at what the value of that asset is, because I think it has shifted, okay, where what you may have been thinking you're willing to pay, 3 months, 6 months ago, I think has now been, altered. And to me, I haven't necessarily seen asset values necessarily drop proportionally to where the economy is or where some of the markets have yet. So, for the right kind of deal for the company and shareholders, we positively would. It's just that you probably have to not only think two or three times about it, you probably have to think maybe the number four or five times, okay, before you do it. But I don't want to mislead you to say that on either side of the equation that no, we're not going to do it, okay. But at the same time, we also highly value our credit rating in this environment. So our credit rating probably goes up a notch, okay, in today's world. It was important before. We're probably even a little more important in today's in today's world. But I don't want to mislead you that if the right thing came along, for the right opportunity, we obviously would have to take a good.
Okay, got last question from Terry in the back.
I think you'd indicated you cut CapEx by $200 million. You talk about what you're cutting there?
Where it's cutting? Well, it's twofold, okay? One is a generic cut, okay? We've been working really on our CapEx plan for a better part of half a year, okay? Because it takes a while to kind of get, all the programs lined up. And it was our view even before the financial crisis kind of hit that it was going to be a tougher economic environment, so we had, kind of decided to ratchet back. Now, part of it also reflects that we have had some capacity and supply chain programs in place that we've been spending on in 07 and 08 that we'll complete. So we also don't have that spending, okay, in the 09, from a need standpoint. So it's a combination of both specific programs rolling off and then also just a need to kind of pull back a little bit in the current environment.
Terrific. We're going to have to end it here. Pat, thank you very much for having 3M here today.